I'm Eric Allen for KLCC. Eugene Poetry Slam turns its attention to topics romantic and intimate in the season's final Poetry Slam on Saturday, June 10th at Tsunami Books. Author Wendy Strigar will be a participant with material from her new guidebook to intimacy, Sex That Works. She's written for years about intimacy in her blog, Making Love Sustainable, and is the founder and CEO of the company Good Clean Love. Welcome to KLCC, Wendy.
Thank you so much for having me, Eric.
Well, is it fair to say that this book is as much about feeling as it is about touch?
Yes, it's very fair to say that. And in fact, the introduction is called Learning to Feel. And if I'd had my druthers, that would have been the subtitle of the book, because truly you can't have an intimate life, certainly not a sexual life, if you have cut yourself off from your feeling self. And we know that in the world we live in today, it's just easier and easier to get distracted by any number of apps, digital or otherwise. And, you know, we're also so bombarded by this din of really scary news all the time that one thing that we do as a defense mechanism is we stop feeling. But what we think is that we can choose to stop feeling one thing and that it won't affect other things. But the truth is, as you cut yourself off from your feelings, you lose the whole range of experience of feeling. And most especially, I think, in your capacity to feel sexual and have this surge of desire and libido come up for you. That all comes with the baggage of feeling the sadness and grief and other things that we have to face in our day-to-day life.
It seems to me, too, that the word freedom comes up a lot in your writing and in wider society at this point. What kind of a definition, a healthy definition of freedom, do you have when it comes to intimacy?
Well, I say in the book that sexual freedom is really about taking responsibility for your own sexual needs. So it's the moment where you are not waiting for someone to make you feel sexy or do the right thing or say the right thing, but really like taking responsibility to find and tap into and cultivate and nurture the libido, which is in all of us. So I spend a whole chapter actually talking about the difference between sexual license, which is, I think, often mistaken in our culture for sexual freedom. This idea I can have sex with anybody, you know, hook up, friends with benefits, whatever, as though it has no consequence. But truly, the erotic damage that a lot of that kind of freedom, in quotes, you know, takes on us, I think actually really terminates a lot of people's sexual curiosity really prematurely.
When we get to a healthy definition of intimacy and freedom and all of those things, how do you see it impacting the other aspects of our lives?
You know, I always say that if we could only solve one problem in the world and it was sexual, it would solve all the others. People laugh at me when I say that, but I really think it's true, because after we eat, sleep, and drink, the next thing we are is sexual, whether we live a sexual life or not. And to the degree that so many people on this planet live a very suppressed sexual life, it impacts. And so the other side of the sexual coin of desire and sort of living through your libido is anger. And so when you think about like the suppression of physical passion and desire, how that often turns into this repressed kind of fury, anger, I mean, I think that's just what we see playing out everywhere. And so I think that when we become more comfortable with who we are as sexual beings, we're so much more open and curious to every other part of our life. And a lot of times we don't even realize that until it starts to happen. You know, it's like really like the lights come up in our life in a way that is really unique, I think, to sexual healing.
One of the aspects that you talk about quite a bit in the book is the concept of courage. And how do you see courage applying in this case?
The themes in the book, Sex That Works, are all things like courage, curiosity, freedom, things you're asking me about, which really apply to much more than sexuality in life. But, you know, there's no way that you can sort of move into the depth of your erotic soul without courage, right? So, you know, and if you think about courage in the multifaceted way that it is, so not just in the vulnerability, like actually, you know, there's a quote in the book that gets re-quoted a lot about that real sexual courage is not about taking off our clothes so much as it is bearing our heart. And so being able to really express what we want, to say to somebody, you know, can you touch me here like this? A lot of people don't have just even those words. And also to be able to listen to other people's wounds and fears and shame about sex. And here's the other thing about courage is that it's not a one-time deal. You don't just do it. You don't just do it one time. It's like really in resilience, you know, becoming a resilient, sexual, curious person is a big part of like what courage means, and being persistent at it, you know, so that you don't have a couple of misses, which every sexual life has that, right? Like you have the best of intentions, it doesn't quite work, and can you come back? Can you come back with the frustration or the tears or whatever it is that you have and not shut somebody out and deal with their version of their own problems and craziness, which we all have, and say, okay, let's look at this again. Let's see if we can start again with fresh eyes. That takes an amazing amount of courage to come to our intimacy with that.
It seems to me that also connects to another primary theme in the book, which is the more meditative concept of awareness or sheer presence. How does that connect to courage for you?
So, boy, that is like sort of the million-dollar question, Eric, you know, because, you know, if we cannot bring our attention to the moment we're in, you could argue that we are not in it. And I know that I'm a meditator and something that I am constantly working on, not multitasking anymore. And, you know, just being in the moment I'm in, you know, at any moment, whether in a conversation like this or, you know, dealing with a conflict at work, just like to stay in that moment, I think, is an incredible practice and one that we all need to do more. But so it's like, here's the thing. If you come into your bedroom and you come in with anxiety about your body image because you feel like you've gained too much weight, or you come in with the worries of the day, whatever they may be, or the news cycle that you can't get out of your head because you don't turn it off your phone, you know, then, and you expect to somehow find orgasmic pleasure, let me just tell you, don't bother. Because the part of our brain that processes anxiety cannot work simultaneously with the part of our brain that needs to surrender to feel orgasmic pleasure move through us. So, and actually, that is one of the pressure points that a lot of people have. In America, we frequently make love for only 7 minutes, which is not really enough time to really experience even a tenth of what is possible for you to feel in that moment. And if that 7 minutes is laden with this performance anxiety about, will I get there? Will she get there? You know, what will happen after? You're not going to get anywhere, you know, because really what it requires is just coming into a room, closing a door, and actually being open to what can transpire with touch and using your senses. We have a whole chapter about like just experiencing the moment through our sensory capacity, which is so rich, and that most of us never even taste our food, right? Or we rarely stop and actually smell flowers. All of those things inform us when we want to be intimate. And so that's actually where that's what that surrender looks like. Through our senses. I mean, our hands are literally miraculous in terms of their capacity to sense and feel. But how often do we just have a physical conversation where we run our hands over somebody's body without an expectation of getting anywhere and feel what that feels like to be felt? That's actually where the magic starts to happen.
These things certainly apply in all of the connection between two people. Are there things in this book that apply for those who are celibate either by choice or situation?
So here's the thing. I think that Sex That Works is an incredible book for somebody who is not partnered. Because the truth is, and one thing that I talk about frequently in the book, is that to the degree that you don't have this relationship to yourself And the idea that you could somehow fix that by a relationship to somebody else is really misdirected, right? We always want this relationship, a sexual relationship to ourselves first. Every great sexual therapist that's ever walked this planet has said that the cornerstone of our sexuality is masturbation. So if we don't have a capacity or an interest or a curiosity about self-pleasure, then what we lose on so many levels is not only the ownership of that pleasure. It's not that somebody else doesn't give us that. We share that with somebody else. But we also lose such a huge amount of intellectual sort of an articulation of an intellectual understanding and an ability to articulate what feels good for us. If we don't have that ourselves, how do we expect somebody is going to show us that? And I think that is like really one of the biggest sexual myths that persists. That somehow if you're partnered right and that kind of crazy falling in love, sort of can't take your hands off of each other, that's really sex. No, that's actually your like cascading hormonal reality sort of leading you when you're 17 years old. Or if you're lucky, maybe you have that happen in your 30s. It never happened to me in my 30s. But, you know, I do remember those feelings when I first started to make out with a guy that was cute for me. But we think that that is what sex should feel like. No, what sex should feel like is this deep dive into the most mysterious part of what it is that makes us human. And that takes everybody to fully show up and not actually hold other people responsible for showing us how to get that.
And when we successfully dive deeply into those most intimate places, what seems to result is perhaps gratitude. And gratitude is a closing chapter in this book. So how does gratitude interact with intimacy from your perspective?
Well, you know, if it was up to me, I wouldn't have put that chapter last. But I actually, it's my favorite chapter in the book. There's some parts of that chapter that makes me cry every time I read it out loud. But, you know, what I would say to you is that in the last moments of your life, the only thing that you'll count is who you loved and who loved you back. And we spend so little time in our day-to-day life focusing on that. I give this exercise about, you know, I have four kids and I'm married for forever, 35 years. And I don't have this like oozy, like gushy, oh, I love my people all the time. But how I would trick myself into finding it over the years when I was just overrun by sporting events or homework or laundry was that I would imagine that as they drop them off at school or dorms or airports, that would be the last time I would ever see them. And if you just even for 10 seconds imagine that this moment is the last time you'll ever interact with the people you love, you're a fool if it doesn't make you love them more.
And how will you integrate all of this with slam poetry?
Well, I have this amount of time, so I wish you would be there asking me these questions again, but I'm just going to try to kind of, you know, give people this breath, these fresh eyes to look at their intimate life. I am extremely vulnerable in this book. That's actually one thing people say when they read the book. Oh, can't believe how vulnerable you are. And I'm like, oh, can't believe you just said that. So I tell a lot of deep stories about my own passages, which I think is the reason that the book really works, because it's not me talking at somebody about do this, which is what most sex books have in common. It's like some expert telling people how to have a better sex life. This is actually me literally lifting the covers off of how I have evolved into being, I mean, my sex life saves me every week, you know, and I've met the same guy for 35 years and it is like out of this world, like cover my eyes. What was that? And I am not like just some like anomaly. That is available to everyone to the degree that they agree to use their attention and their senses and that they live a feeling life. And it's so short, this life. It's so, so, so short. So what else are we here for?
Indeed. Well, thank you for your multifaceted contributions to that through all that you do in the world as a writer, a human, and a company holder. And thanks for coming in.
I'm so grateful, Eric. Thank you so much.
Wendy Strugar, whose years of writing from her blog Making Love Sustainable have been distilled into her new book Sex That Works. She'll be part of Eugene Poetry Slam's 7th annual slam focusing on sex, love, loss, and romance. It'll be at Tsunami Books on Saturday, June 10th at 7 p.m. For more information on the event, see Eugene Poetry Slam on Facebook. For more on Wendy's writings, makinglovesustainable.com. For an extended version of this interview, klcc.org. For KLCC, I'm Eric Allen.